Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
The nation of Israel found themselves in bondage, and through the leadership of Moses and the blessings of God, they were delivered out of that bondage, crossed over the Red Sea, came to Mount Sinai, and God gave the law. They were at the mountain for some time before in the receiving of the law, and then finally that came the time for them to begin their journey toward the land of Canaan. They journeyed, and then in chapter 13, the latter part of that chapter, we have the account of the sending out of the spies and the report the spies brought back. And of the sad day in the history of the nation of Israel when that occurred. That was a critical time in the history of the nation. Decisions made that day would affect their progress in coming years. In fact, the decision that was made that day affected their progress for the next 38 years. Some of them, as a result of the decision made that day, never did enter into the land of Canaan. And there are a number of principles that are found in that chapter that are vital in connection with progress. Decisions that are made by nations determine which direction they'll go. Decisions made by individuals determine whether they'll make progress or whether they'll go backwards. Decisions made by congregations are also important, and they determine the future progress or the lack of progress of a congregation. I believe that there are some principles in Numbers 13 that can help us if we look at it and think about it and see the vital nature of the things that are suggested in this chapter. Of course, you remember how 10 of the spies said they saw giants and they was afraid of trying to go over and take the land. They said the inhabitants of the land would eat us up. And there was the confidence of Caleb and Joshua, who said that, "Let us go up and possess the land, for we are able." Now, I'd like for us to look at some things in this chapter, the latter part of the chapter, in chapter 14 as well, that I hope we'll think carefully about. Because though this is history in the Old Testament, there are lessons in it that are as up to date as if it had been written for us today. First of all, this chapter tells us of the vital nature of leadership. It was the leadership that determined what happened that day in the nation of Israel. And that's true. And so we need to think about this chapter from the standpoint of leadership. What lessons in it are lessons that can be helpful to us, beneficial, things we can learn to avoid, and principles that we can learn to practice. As I mentioned, the spies determined the direction and the position of the nation for the next 38 years. And that tells us how critical leadership is. The progress of a congregation always is measured by its leadership. So let us think about some things in this connection. First of all, the leadership was divided. There were 10 and 2. And the divided situation of the leadership had a bearing upon what happened that day. There's not any way that you can have progress and united work with divided leadership. All we need to do is to look around in the nations of the world. Look at the United Nations. What can the United Nations accomplish? Nothing. Why? Because of the division that exists in the leadership of the people that are there. And this is true of a congregation. True of God's people. In the second place, we learn that leadership cannot lead out of fear. 10 spies said, "We are afraid." There are giants over there. We're unable to deal with it. And there's no way that leadership can be function without faith. For example, in chapter 14 and verse 9, we read where Caleb said, "On, rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us, fear them not." Now mark it. Twice in that verse there are two men who are unafraid. They are willing to lead out of faith and not out of fear. And that's the way that leadership always has to function. Leadership has to be men that believe that they can do what God says do like God says do it, without there being any fear and trembling. And therefore, a lesson that is to be learned, that we must believe in God, believe that we can do what He tells us to do, and not be afraid of whatever might be the problems that we may anticipate, as the 10 spies did. In the third place, leadership must face reality, and congregation must face reality. The congregation that's going to make progress has to face the reality of what the situation is. Now, I'd like for you to notice, Joshua and Caleb did not deny the reality of there being giants over in the land. They saw the giants just like the 10 spies did. They were willing to face up to the reality, but they knew how to deal with the giants. They knew how to face giants. And so there's a difference in attitude in the way that you face the reality of situations. We may face the reality of a situation and decide like the 10 spies did. Well, it's just too big to do anything about. And the day that we are confronted with anything that we need to do, any problems that we are confronted with, and we decide that those problems are bigger than we are and that we cannot deal with them, that's the day we'll mark the end of our progress. You don't grow by refusing to face reality, and you don't grow by wishing away problems and difficulties. They have to be recognized and learned that there is a means and a method under the direction and the guidance of God in His Word of finding solutions to every problem. There are no problems that the Bible does not give us principles that will help us solve them. Now, it may be, as we'll see later in our study, that we may not be willing to accept the direction that's given by God to help us find the solution to our problem. But again, another significant thought in connection with the event that occurred here is the importance of leadership giving proper example. Now look at it. Here are 10 spies who say it can't be done. What was the result of it? They discouraged the nation. And for 38 years, they would march around in circles simply because of a failure of those who were in the lead to furnish the proper example. The 10 spies were poor examples. In fact, in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3, among other things, Peter said that elders are to be an example unto the flock. And therefore, there is to be the example of dedication, the example of interest and concern in knowing the will of God, and in studying the Bible, and in seeking to find out what the Bible teaches and live by what the Bible teaches. Therefore, Joshua and Caleb said, "Let us." They were willing to set the example, willing to go in front and to establish the path that they needed to take. Then again, we learned the vital nature of communication as far as leadership is concerned. Look at what happened. 10 of the spies communicated a negative attitude. They said, "We can't do it." It's beyond our ability. They're giants. We're just little folks. We can't do anything about it. Our hands are tied. We'll just, the inhabitants of the land will eat us up. And so there's one attitude. The attitude of we cannot do what needs to be done is always a defeatist attitude. I've lived long enough to learn enough and to see enough to know that when opportunities are given, needs are presented, doors are open, the only way to face those doors and opportunities is by saying, we can because we ought to. And without that kind of attitude to direct the congregation and to encourage the congregation, work will never succeed. And so, on the other side was Joshua and Caleb. They had a positive attitude. Look at what they had to say. Verse 30, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. Look at the difference in the language. Just listen to the change and the contrast in attitude. But the men that went up with them said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. Can you not see the difference in the philosophy of life that says, we are able, and the philosophy said, but we can't. We're not able. And therefore, the difficulty that was created. Then note also that Caleb said, let us go up. Here you have the vital nature of cooperation. In any endeavor that is successful and where progress is made, there must be the unity and the cooperation of the entire congregation. We must be able to work together and not at cross purposes. In Acts chapter 4 and verse 32, a statement made in relationship to unity is very seldom thought about. And we read that the multitude was of one heart and one soul, and not one of them said that all the things which he possessed was his own. Now think about that statement. The multitude, there's numbers, were of one heart and one soul. Not one of them said that all of the things which he possessed was his own. There you have complete unity of mind and heart and the total absence of selfishness and self-will. Not one of them was out of step with the rest of them. And therefore, cooperation. Had the nation cooperated with Joshua and Caleb, they could have gone into the land of Canaan. Had the 10 spies cooperated with the 2, they could have gone into the land of Canaan. But a failure to cooperate with them. In Acts 11:29, listen to what it says, Church of Antioch. Then every man, according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which were in Judea. Now think about that. How did the church at Antioch succeed in helping the brethren that were in Judea? Every man, according to his ability, determined. Look at those three words. Every man, according to ability and determination. Now you give me those three ingredients in a congregation and that kind of cooperation in whatever the endeavor may be, and you'll have a united and successful work. Without that, it's not going to be successful. And so the work has to be then an unselfish work. We have to realize that we're working for a cause greater than ourselves. And then note also that Joshua in verse 30 said, let us go. And underscore the word go. That denotes activity. And if progress is to be made, there must be activity. You cannot just sit idly by and expect progress to be made in the church. I think sometimes that we think we can fold our hands, and while we sit by, God in some peculiar way is going to cause progress to take place. That's not true as far as my own individual life is concerned, and that's not true as far as the congregation is concerned. And therefore, Joshua said, let us go. We cannot stand still. To stand still is to go backwards. And not only that, Joshua said, let us go up. And we need to underscore not only the word go, but the word up. That denotes progress. That was the direction toward the land of Canaan. And so Joshua said, let us go up. But there also in that is the idea of advance upward, progress. And that's the way that we need to go. We need to go up as far as spiritual growth and development is concerned. We need to increase our knowledge of the Bible. We need to increase the application of the Bible in our life. But not only that, when he said, let us go up, that suggests the idea of direction. Have you ever met anybody and said, well, where are you going today? And said, well, I don't know, I'm just drifting around. Now, where do you think that person is going to end up that day? What do you think will be accomplished for good with the attitude, well, I'm just going, but I really don't know. I didn't have any special plans in mind. I'm just going here and there. Whatever happens, I'll go this direction, or whatever happens, I'll go that direction. Progress can never be made that way. And therefore, in order for us to avoid the problem that they faced, like the 10 spies, they didn't have any plan anyway whatsoever. They just said, we can't do it. Let's just stay here. We don't know what we're going to do, but we just know that as far as going toward the land of Canaan, that's out. And so they didn't make any progress. So direction involves planning. We don't do things by accident. We don't do things without plan and without purpose. We don't do things without, if we're going to grow, without goals. And so we need to think about, what are our goals? What do we have in mind? Suppose I passed out a sheet of paper today and I asked you to write down on a piece of paper, what are the goals of each guest? What did you put out? Would you put out any? How are we going to be able to get anywhere unless we have some goals toward which we're going? We need to know not only the direction that we're going, but why we're going and what we're trying to accomplish. Do we want to reach the people in the community of East Gaston? Do we want to convert the people in East Gaston? What kind of goals do we have that will lead us and direct us and give us effort in doing that? We're not going to be able to reach the people in East Gaston unless we have something definite in mind that we're going to do and how we're going to go about it. Not only that, our goals must be in the right direction. You know, that can be movement and activity without it amounting to anything. For example, I've already mentioned the fact that the nation of Israel would go around in circles for 38 years. There wouldn't be any progress. And so there can be activity and activity without there being any growth. The fact that certain activities are engaged in does not in and of itself mean growth and progress. Why, if you would have seen the nation of Israel, here they are marching around and marching around and marching around. There's activity every day. And you ask them, well, where are you going? And they say, this is where we've been all the time. That's true of an individual life. What do you want to accomplish in your life? And what kind of goal do you have for your life? What direction are you going? Do you know where you're going? Do you have a goal out before you? Or is it just a matter of drifting from day to day and letting each day take care of itself without any plan and without any purpose? I'm not going down to the Y now to exercise through the summer months, but when I was going down to the Y, Billy Fay is also in the exercise class, the first thing that we did every time we got there, we jogged in place. You just stood still and jogged. Well, there was some good that came from that. That warmed us up to get ready for the exercise program. But suppose that I decided that I wanted to, after the exercise program was over, I decided I'd go home, but I believe I'd just jog home. And I just stood there and jogged in one place all the time. Well, it had been a long time before I ever got home jogging in the same place. And so the fact that there are activities that we're engaging in does not in and of itself mean progress. What do those activities signify? Where are those activities to carry us? What is the purpose and the plan and the goal of those activities? Apart from that, we'll be just like Billy Fay and I were down there jogging in the same place. And that's where we stayed. Let us learn then that there must be direction in which we're going. That involves planning, that involves purpose, and that involves goals. We need some goals. What are we going to try to do? We need some goals for Bible study. And the first goal that we need in Bible study is to get serious about Bible study. I'm afraid that some of us have the idea that Bible study is just sort of ritual we go through with. And we are not really in dead earnest in knowing about the will of God. It's not that important to us. We're not that serious about it. And we need to become serious about knowing the Bible, realizing that I need to know it. And when we come to study the Bible, there's not any more important activity going on here than our studying the Bible. And that's the way it ought to be. And we need to remind ourselves that this is what it's all about. If that's not true, then anyone that's not at Bible study, that is, it doesn't come to Bible study, and what's the difference in them and those of us who are here? They're not in the Bible classes. We should think seriously about the matter. Not only that, when he said, let us go up at once, look at the word once. There is a sense of urgency. He didn't say, well, now let's think about it a little while. Let's study about it a little while. And then, after a while, we'll get around to thinking about it, maybe moving in that direction. There is an urgency about what we are engaged in. While I was living in East Gadsden, I had a person to call me and say, there's a man in the hospital that I'd like for you to go see. They said he has lung cancer, and he doesn't have long to live. And it's urgent that somebody talk to him. And I did go to see him and talk to him. But that reminded me of something also. It had been urgent ever since he had been accountable unto God to be interested in the Bible and knowing what the Bible taught. It didn't just become urgent that day. It had been an urgent matter all of his life. But he had just failed to feel the sense of the urgency about it. Someday we'll come down to the end of life's pathway and we'll think, well, it's real urgent to know the Bible and to know what the Bible teaches. But I remind you, it's just as urgent today to know the Bible as it will be then. And we need to have a sense of urgency about it. Not only that, we need to have a sense of urgency about living right. There is the importance of our feeling that sense of living right every day. It'll be right. I wouldn't want to come to the end of life's pathway having not lived right. It'd be terrible to think about the day that I die. I look at my life and I'm separated from God, without God and without hope. what an urgent thing it would be to think about how serious it would be to die without God. But it's just as urgent today that my life be right as it will be the day I die. And I need not think about waiting until then. If there's thing that's wrong in my life, urgency today said, correct it now. Don't wait. Because I do not know whether I live till tomorrow or not. Many people plan and intend to do something about what needs to be done. Multitudes will be lost when they stand before God in judgment because they did not feel the sense of urgency of making wrongs right, correcting wrongs when they had the opportunity. David was guilty of a grievous sin. Perhaps as much as a year had gone by before Nathan came to him and probed the conscience of David and said, David, thou art the man. David didn't say, you know, I've been thinking about this for about a year now, and I'm going to think about it a little while longer. Down here somewhere after a while, then I'm going to give more careful consideration about doing something that's right, making it right. I know what David did. When Nathan said, thou art the man, David said, I have sinned against the Lord. Correction was made then and there. And this event teaches us the importance of the urgency of matters. There are things that are urgent as far as the church is concerned, and we cannot just say, well, we're going to wait and wait and wait. Somewhere after a while, we're going to give attention to these things. To take that attitude is to have the attitude of defeat and a lack of progress. I'm going to talk some more about this tonight because there are other points in this that we need to think about. But I said what I said this morning out of concern for my own spiritual welfare, concern for the church at East Gadsden and its future. And I know that some of the things that I've said this morning have been rather plain, rather pointed. But it's said out of concern and said out of genuine love and care for all of us that are here. And I hope that you'll take them in the spirit in which I've given them this morning. For if you do not, then that's going to block any progress and any good that can come down the road, and as far as our future is concerned, as far as our being able to work together for the good of the church and for the glory of God. I've talked to you out of the Bible and out of a sincere heart of deep regard of things that are urgent and important. And I pray, God, that you'll not just say, I'm going to let that go, and I'm not going to listen. And that'll be the last of the things that I've talked about today. Tonight I'm going to talk about it some more. Other things in here, but our time's gone this morning. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, let me encourage you to become one. It's urgent. You may have been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, but it's urgent. You don't know whether you'll live till tonight or not. You don't know whether you'll live till tomorrow or not. You don't know whether you have another opportunity. And therefore, it's urgent that you believe and obey the gospel of Christ this day. If there's wrong in your life that needs to be corrected, if it's private, it's urgent that you go home and get on your knees and ask God to forgive you and make whatever restitution may be necessary to correct it. If it's been public, then it's urgent that you correct it now because you may not have the opportunity to do it tonight. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, repent of your sin, will confess your faith and be baptized, Then he'll add you to the church. That'll be the greatest day of your life up until this time.